Welcome to the Building Wealth Through Commercial Real Estate podcast with Jonathan Way, where we unravel the secrets to financial success in the dynamic world of commercial real estate. We're bringing in special guests to share their insights on how they started their journey and crafted their way to success. And here's your host, Jonathan Way.
Hello, Clint. Welcome to our show, Building Wealth Through Commercial Real Estate. I'm really glad you come in today and share some time with us.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Great. So, Clint, can you tell us a little background to our audience on how you got into real estate and what's your niche in real estate?
Sure. My name is Clint Harris. I'm in Wilmington, North Carolina. I had a 16-year career as a medical sales rep implanting pacemakers and defibrillators. And that's kind of a young man's game. It's a long haul, a lot of taking call, working nights, working weekends. So I always was inclined to kind of build an off-ramp from that lifestyle. So started investing in real estate, specifically with single-family homes at first, which is a very slow strategy. Then I started buying small multifamily properties and converting them to Airbnbs where we live at the beach, which was great, but it gave me financial freedom, but it did not give me time or location independence. It was a very laborious portfolio. So life changed for us in a meaningful way when some partners and I in 2021 bought an old Kmart building. So we bought a Kmart in Reidsville, North Carolina. There's very little appetite for a large big box retail space like that. So we got the property for pennies on the dollar compared to the replacement cost. Okay. We bought that building for $1.5 million. We put around $2.5 million into it. So we're into the building for around $4 million and stabilized value is around $9 million. So on that project, just converting it to a different asset class, you change the formula by which it's valued. It has massive forced appreciation. So we did that project as a joint venture. And then when we bought that one for 1.5, the replacement cost, just if we wanted to build that cinder block shell, was 6.5 million. So that's really where the value is getting the property for much less than the initial upfront purchase price. So we went on from there. My partners founded Nomad Capital and invited me to join as one of the general partners. So been under operation for coming up on 3 years with Nomad Capital. I left cardiology just to be full-time real estate investor. Last year, we did 2 Kmarts, 3 warehouses, and a grocery store that we converted to Class A climate-controlled self-storage. So we had a 2-year goal of trying to hit $100 million in assets under management at stabilization. Mm-hmm. We beat that goal by a couple weeks. It was very close, but we beat it. And then we're sitting around $150 million in assets under management at stabilization right now. We got a 5-year goal of $500 million and a 10-year goal of $1 billion. So that's my job is investor relations, capital raising, and education. So we raise capital from groups of investors. We specifically focus on buying Kmart's, grocery stores, warehouses. Mm-hmm. My partners are the GCs. We do the construction in-house, and then we convert them and stabilize them and manage them in-house as grade A climate-controlled self-storage.
So you have your own property management in-house company. So you're vertically integrated.
Yep. Good. That top to bottom. And honestly, just to be frank with you, that's really the only way to reduce enough of the risk that it's the juice is worth the squeeze. So we do buy buildings that are on the market, but a lot of times the ones we get are off market. So we're not paying retail costs for the buildings. We're building out at cost plus 12%. So we don't pay retail costs for the construction. We have in-house property management because my partners own some self-storage facilities that they built in the past themselves. Mm-hmm. So we have property and asset management at 5%. So everything is just, it's fully vertically integrated top to bottom to make sure that we land in that sweet spot where when we open the door to a building, we cut the yellow ribbon and then renting it out and filling it up. We're typically, because of that low cost basis, average self-storage may stabilize, or you know, their break-even point may be 60 to 65% occupancy. Yeah. Ours is typically around 40%. Mm-hmm. And once it's stabilized, we're sitting around 30 to 35% loan to value. What that means is we don't have to build assets up and then sell them to get a payday for our investors and ourselves. We can refinance. So we'll typically refinance to 55, maybe 60% loan to value. We don't want to stress the asset. That'll allow us to pay out all of our investors and pull a few million out for ourselves. That way, when you take it out by way of refinance, it's not a capital event because we didn't sell anything. So that allows us to do the best we can to try to double all of our investors' money in 5 years or less, but then we keep the asset long term. We allow our investors to stay in the deal and they continue to get cash flow moving forward.
Okay. So very similar to what I do. But let me ask you this. In terms of your conversion, how long it takes to actually convert a Kmart into a self-storage?
Great question. So it's project specific. Some of these are in much rougher shape than others. We have, a grocery store that had a giant hole punched in the roof from a tornado and had all the copper stripped out of it, had a tribe of homeless people living in it. Like, you get into all kinds of different scenarios. Yeah. On average, it's going to take about a year, right? So a lot of times we're working inside. Once we fix the roof or the AC units, everything else is interior. So we don't have to worry about weather as much. So we try to get it done in 8 to 10 months. We're going to tell our investors it's going to be a year. So typically, depending on the size of the property, it'll take us about a year to do the conversion. And then sometimes a year, sometimes 18 months or longer to stabilize the property, depending on how big it is. Obviously, the larger the property, the longer it takes to fill it up.
Mm-hmm. And do you do a feasibility study to make sure the area supports the demand and supply and all that?
Yep, absolutely. You're speaking my language. So yeah, absolutely. We always do in-house feasibility study as well as third party. So we use Bob Copper with Self Storage 101. He's kind of the gold standard. So we're looking at, there's a reason there was a big box retail space there at one point in time. We're not in primary markets like a Charlotte or a Raleigh. We're across the Southeast, but specifically, we like to look at secondary and tertiary markets where there's been major population growth in the Eastern, especially Eastern North Carolina, but across the Carolinas, Georgia, Tennessee, Virginia. So we've had massive population growth in a lot of these smaller secondary and tertiary markets, which are traditionally underserved for storage. So if we can find a Kmart or a big warehouse building or something like that, they are oftentimes situated right in the middle of town. At one point in time, they were likely one of the larger employers for the area. So typically what we're looking for is that really strong residential density in the 1, 3, 5, and 7 mile radius. We want to look at the number of people in the town, make sure the population is rising and not falling, average people per household, the age, median income, not make sure not too many people work for one company that could close down and drive people out of town. So that everything that you look for, it's about a 60-page report. So we do an in-house feasibility study as well as third party. And we want to make sure that we're not looking for speculation and building in an area where we expect there to be demand. Mm-hmm. We want to go into a market where there is already demand that's there, maybe a limited amount of storage. The storage that's there is full with high prices and a wait list. We want to make sure that demand is already there. And then we can move quickly to come in and buy a property for less than the replacement cost, do the construction in-house. So it has a much faster timeline to opening the doors versus ground up construction. Mm-hmm. When you come into a market like that and say you pick up 90 or 100,000 square feet, which is going to convert to 75 to 85,000 net rentable square feet, it's really hard for anybody else to compete with you. And we can kind of move quick in that space and be first to market with a new facility, even if somebody else is trying to do ground up development.
Yeah, you have an advantage because you can get lower costs through in-house. I guess you guys will save money by using your own costs and figure out the sourcing of lowest labor and make sure it meets on time. Whereas you outsource it, there could be a risk, obviously. That's the biggest risk in development when you outsource something. It doesn't go according to plan and all this stuff like that. And the other issue is the city too. You know, the city has to be cooperative, work with the city, make sure they cooperate, give you the timeline and everything else.
That's right. And we've had situations where that's not always the case. Like we had one, my hometown, actually, we were looking at a Kmart in my hometown and the town decided that they had too much storage. And so they changed the zoning where storage was only going to be allowed in areas that were zoned industrial. So they were against it. So we went in another direction. Most of the time, the town is just very excited that somebody is doing something with the project. Typically, these buildings have been sitting empty for so long. They're just happy that someone is doing something. But before a deal ever makes it to our investors, we're making sure that the zoning is good. We're doing the phase one or the phase two or mitigation risks and everything like that to make sure it's going to work. The most of the time, the town's very excited just to have something going on. Mm-hmm. But you're right. That's one of the things you have to navigate. We also have scenarios where a lot of times we're going into the markets that are booming. Like we have a property in Holden Beach, North Carolina, is in Brunswick County, an area that's exploding. We have another property that the Kmart that we built out in Danville, Virginia, is a mile and a half from the new $550 million casino that's going in. Okay. Both of those counties had unbelievable backlog of permits and people filing for new construction and new projects. So that's something you have to get way out ahead of, make sure you have relationships on a local level to try to get the permitting and everything done in a timely manner.
Right.
And that's the value of just having a team. Like, that's all our acquisition team does. And our contracts team is this is it. We do storage, we buy buildings, we convert them, and that's what we spend all of our time focusing on.
Okay. Okay, great. So that's your niche. Your niche is just basically we're almost like a warehouse conversion into self storage, whereas you don't buy like an existing or someone who's retiring or those things like that, you know.
It's a great question. We have four strategies. All right. So the four strategies are pretty much what most people are going to do. We could do new development and have in the past. We can do expansion projects where we buy a project and we can double the size of it or add another building. We have operational turnaround since we have in-house management, but by far the lowest hanging fruit for us, because of the skill set that my partners have in terms of being the general contractors with over 30 years of commercial construction experience, that's a really heavy lift. For people out there that are trying to do conversions, if you're paying retail costs for the building, for the construction, for the capital, and for the management, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. For us, we have a strategic advantage through that vertical integration. So there are other strategies that we have employed in the past and that we would be willing to look at. But for us, our job is to listen to the market, make sure we do the best thing for our investors. And that right now is conversions, and the market is telling us that we should be in acquisition. So we're going and moving quickly. And that's by far the fastest and largest value add. If we were going to do ground up development for Class A climate controlled self-storage, it's, you know, retail cost of that is around $120 a square foot for the construction, plus the cost of the land. With our conversion projects, when we are done with the building, the parking lot, which we often don't need and can outparcel, the conversion is done and it's ready to go and we're opening the doors, we're average $63.50 a square foot. So it's about half the cost of construction, not including the land. That's the reason why we land with that really low LTV that allows us to refinance. Like, if you're doing new development or you're buying or building a facility up and you do go through the cost of ground up development, in order for you to get a meaningful payday, you have to liquidate the asset. You're building, you know, buying it, building it, expanding it, whatever it may be. You're not going to land at that really low LTV where you can refinance and pull much out in a meaningful way. You have to have an asset class conversion. When you change the asset class, you change the formula by which the asset is valued. That's what creates that huge forced appreciation. Otherwise, we're building facilities up, and then you bought it as a self-storage, which means you're selling it as a self-storage because it's the same asset, and then we're basically just house flippers, right? Yeah. At the end of the day, if in order for you and your investors to get a payday, I don't care if it's multifamily or RV parks or storage or whatever, if you have to liquidate the asset for everybody to get paid, you're trading time for money. And at the end of the day, you're basically a house flipper. The day you stop working is the day you stop getting paid.
Right.
We want to land in a position where we can refinance, make sure everybody gets a good short-term payday, but we keep the assets. Some of them we're going to liquidate, but the vast majority we want to keep because our goal is to have $1 billion in assets under management at stabilization.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Very good. I like that because you have similar concept. What I do, I call it infinite return, where in some of mine that's in good areas I like, I will refinance and hold for long term because I want the cash flow, passive income to me and my investors, and they're still in the deal. That's what I do.
Yep,
so I do the same thing what you do. But in the past, I got a very low price. That's why for these deals are good. And I also expanded on them. So that's how I got very more value through them. But I like your ideology of the warehouse, but I don't have that kind of skill set like you do, where you have this partner who know how to get low cost and go in. That's the best hard to do.
Listen, let's be honest. I don't have the skill set either. My partners do. Yeah. So I'm partnered with people that are much more talented and intelligent than I am. Right. So they're doing the heavy lifting, but together we have a great team. So yeah, that's really the key. There were a lot of people that were finding great deals with some sort of value add, and you position yourself in a way that it's going to appreciate and you can hold it long term. For a lot of those people that we speak to, finding deals right now is tough. That's the hard part, is the deal flow.
Right.
Luckily, with the big box retail space, there's very little appetite for big box retail. Amazon and Walmart have pretty much wiped that out. So for us, it's a niche that we think we can lean into. We think we probably have another 6 or 8 years, which is the timeline that we need to get to $1 billion. So
Okay. Well, that's great. I'm very glad that you guys thought about it very carefully and evaluated different options, because this because obviously the buying is not working. But in these days, you know, the demand has softened a little bit. You noticed that basically the past years, and you heard like AJ Osborne's podcast or whatever in the industry, it softened a little bit. What do you thought about that and the softening of demand of self-storage?
There is some softening across the market. I think that that's the number one thing, is that there's a ton of it coming to the area. We want to make sure that we're operating in markets that are underserved. The demand is already there. It's not speculative. We're not waiting on it to show up. The beauty of our strategy is that, you know, the thing about self-storage is what matters is about a 7-mile radius. That's about as far as people want to travel to get self-storage. They're not going to drive across town to a storage unit just because one is a little bit nicer than the other. They're usually looking for proximity. I also think that the consumers in the space are changing, and so I think storage needs to change as well. The millennials are now making up the largest population segment in the country. They're now 34% of the population, but they're using 38% of the storage. These younger people are not buying homes the way that they previously did, that had garages and basements and attics. They're renting. And when you're renting based upon the amount of square footage that you're renting. So a lot of what we're seeing is that instead of renting a 2-bedroom condo for $1,800 a month, they may rent a 1-bedroom condo for $1,300 a month and then get a storage unit for $150 or $200 a month and use it as an extension of the closet or the garage. Most of the things that they have are more lifestyle, which is like bikes, kayaks, you know, mountain bikes, snowboards, fishing rods, and then winter clothes. Because they're using it as an extension of the closet or garage, they're in and out of these units significantly more than the older generation was. Sure. So the facilities for us that we're really leaning into is we want them to be safe, secure, well-lit, easy access, and they have to be climate controlled. So it has to have a QR code on the door and a touchscreen kiosk. People be able to get in at 6 a.m. on a Saturday morning to get their snowboard and their bibs and get out of town and go to the mountains. So the consumer is changing a little bit. So I think a combination of the right location with the residential density and the demand, leaning into what the consumers are looking for in terms of storage, and then on top of that, marketability, like in terms of vehicle count, and everybody in that town knows where the old Kmart building was, right? Yeah. So we have really good visibility, and it makes sense from that standpoint. So there can be some softening there, but even if demand is going down because of our initial low cost basis, we've never had to do this. But if someone comes next door to us and builds another facility, they're not going to be able to compete with us on price, even if we needed to, because our initial cost basis is so much lower.
I see.
So I think that by leaving as much value in the deal as possible through the vertical integration, it gives us a little bit more leeway to navigate any challenges we find in the industry.
Okay.
For now, the national average for self-storage is around 93% occupancy. On ours, we operate under the City Storage brand. Our occupancy is above 97%. And I think that's just a testament to picking the right properties in the first time, where there is a demand there that's underserved. And we talked about this before we got in here. We had a scenario with a Kmart in Danville, Virginia. We went under contract. While we were under contract, we found out that U-Haul bought 7 acres across the street to develop. We decided to move forward with the project, and 10 months later it was open. So now that property's cash flow positive, continuing to book up. U-Haul still hasn't broken ground yet. So speed to market in terms of opening the doors and making sure that the demand is already there, and an ability to navigate price or constraints because of the low initial cost basis, I think gives us a strategic advantage.
Mm-hmm. And do they rent? Can you rent online? Call? How do the consumer rent to your storage?
We typically have someone on site at our facilities until we hit about 60% occupancy. We want to get everybody that's walking through there, and obviously some of the people that just want to drive up are a little bit less sophisticated. So we want to capture everybody. Our break even is about 40% occupancy. We typically have a manager there until we hit about 60. Then we will move them off to another location. From there on, we manage our facilities through a hub and spoke model, where one office can manage 5 or 6 different locations. Okay. And people can rent units online is obviously probably the number one way. And then the other option is people can walk up and there's a QR code on the door, or a touchscreen kiosk, so they can come at 2 in the morning and rent a unit on site.
That's very interesting. So you have at least up to 60%, and afterwards remote is a remote, basic remote management effectively.
We have tried 100% remote, and the reality is it still works. It just is a lot slower. Your lease-up process is slower. So for us, we have the staff. It typically makes more sense for us to have someone on site until we hit, we're well into cash flow positive, and then we can move them on to another facility.
Okay. Well, great, Clint. I really appreciate your insight on that. Very good. How can people reach out to you if they're interested to invest with you or learn more about your company?
Yeah, the best way to contact us is just nomadcapital.us. You can go to our website there and schedule a call with us. My name's Clint Harris. You can always email me directly, clint@nomadcapital.us. You can find me on LinkedIn or Facebook.
Okay, thank you very much for your time. Have a great day.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to the Building Wealth Through Commercial Real Estate with Jonathan Way. If you enjoyed today's episode and want more tips on growing your wealth through real estate, be sure to subscribe. Don't miss out on future insights and success stories. If you're interested in learning about passive investment opportunities, then visit us at www.greystonecapgroup.com. Check back for new episodes. See you again next time.